The Barr Brothers, a Canadian folk quartet founded in Montreal by American brothers Andrew and Brad Barr, just released their sophomore record, Sleepless Operator, this past month. Andrew Barr had a few moments to talk with me about the band, its place in mainstream music, and ice cream.
Just forget I ever said that it's true love enough. I got a diamond in my hip and a universal bluff. Gotta find a better glue to hold this picture of the sun.
Just to start off on a kooky note, have you had any crazy or interesting fan experiences while you've been on the road?
Fan experiences?
Mm-hmm.
Well, gosh, it's been a fun summer. We spent a lot of time over in Europe, and we ended up doing this. Somebody talked us into doing this Ben and Jerry's traveling ice cream and music show, which is something we're really unsure what the dynamic was going to be, and it ended up being this kind of fight for fans between the ice cream and the band. And I think we lost every night. There was like these lines around the corner for this ice cream truck, and then we were this band set up on the side, and people would get their ice cream and kind of walk by us and then go for more ice cream. And that was kind of the weirdest event of the summer so far, with this, you know, playing this new music. But it was actually an awesome time for us to get some of these new songs together. And we had never played in Germany before, so
Ooh. We
made some good friends, some good fans.
Ooh, did you pick up any German when you were over there?
Guten Morgen.
Well, that was good.
That's good, Morgan.
Yeah.
Good morning. Yeah.
Well, my name is actually Deutsch, my last name. So. I don't. The only thing I know how to say is Sprechen Sie German, or no, not Sprechen Sie German. I don't even know. I don't know German. I'll just put it out there. I don't know German. My last name means German in German. I'm a failure in terms of that language, but I know English moderately well. So I guess I can, you know, rely on that.
That's what most of us can say.
Yeah. But that ice cream story is very interesting. So if you had to put your music up against ice cream, which would you choose?
You know, it would depend on the ice cream, on the flavor. But I'd say 9 times out of 10, I'd choose the music. But, you know, a super, super duper cup of dark chocolate ice cream on a warm summer day might take me away from the drum set for a couple hours.
Okay. That is admirable, and I admire your honesty in that, because I would probably do the same if it was like a mango sherbet or something, you know, fruity,
yeah.
Or like a frozen yogurt or something like really, really nice and yummy and refreshing. And yeah. Okay. Well, I did not expect a story involving ice cream and fans, but I'm happy I asked you about that.
You never know what's going to come out of your mouth when you just open it up sometimes.
No. Hey, that was great. Don't ever stop closing your mouth. Okay.
Unless you're chewing, like my mom says.
Oh yeah, I was gonna do a story, but it's okay. So tell me about how the band started, and particularly how you all got into using the Barr Brothers as your band name.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I guess to go back to the real beginning, Brad and I had a group called The Slip, and we were touring. We toured pretty much from the age of like 17 to our mid to late 20s. And somewhere along the way, in about 2004, we played our first show in Montreal. And it was this awesome night. The room was full. And I saw this waitress that I was sure that, you know, I could put my life in her hands the second I saw her. And luckily, the place caught on fire. And I got to talk to said waitress outside. We had to all kind of clear out onto the street, and it was kind of raining out. So I thought, okay, here's my golden opportunity. So I walked over and I gave her my jacket and, you know, kind of started doing, you know, the smooth talk or whatever. I'm sure I wasn't very good at it, but I managed to get her phone number And then I actually managed to lose it a week later when I was touring in Ireland. And then it took me a year to track her down again. And finally, I did. I found her via some connection of a friend of a friend who knew her. And went up to visit in Montreal and fell in love and moved up there like a week later. And that was kind of right around the time our old band was deciding to take a little bit of a break. And so my brother joined me up in Montreal. And it was kind of the first time we actually didn't have a band together. There was like this year where we were both kind of just adjusting to living in a new city and kind of being strangers. And Brad started writing all these gorgeous songs that kind of had this, I don't know, kind of voyeuristic charm to them, kind of unlike a lot of the stuff he'd written before. And so we started recording them in this little studio we built, not really sure of what we were going to do with them. And somewhere along the way, he moved into an apartment in the plateau of Montreal. And it just so happened that he would hear this music coming through his wall, and he figured out that it was a harpist. And so he started kind of playing along with her, and one day actually wrote a song through something that he was hearing through the drywall. And he went over and introduced himself to her, and they learned that song together. And then he ended up deciding, geez, this is something to pursue, like the harp guitar combination. And all of a sudden he's got, you know, 70 new strings to arrange, and Sarah is a harpist who's like none other I've heard. She's like very, very experimental. She's open to all sorts of stuff, and we kind of try to drag her down in the mud and get her to play all sorts of, you know, I don't know, Delta blues-inspired, West African-inspired stuff. And so anyway, lo and behold, a year later, we kind of had been continuing to record these songs, and Sarah then recorded a bunch of the songs with us. And our friends in a band called The Low Anthem asked us to go on the road with them. So we said, okay, let's make a record. And so we printed up the 10 songs we had recorded, and we needed a name to put on the CD. So we just thought the Barr Brothers, we won't really, you know, if 30 years into life we haven't hated the name Barr yet, we probably will continue to love it. So we went with, you know, simple, the Barr Brothers, and yeah, that was 4 years ago, I think, that we put that record out.
Okay. Well, when I saw your performance, I think it was on KEXP, which was like the first time I heard you all, like it was absolutely amazing. And I think I just only, I guess maybe the way the video was, or maybe I just wasn't paying attention enough, I only saw you and your brother. And so when I looked at your all's bio and just the press photos you all had, it showed the entire band. I was like, where did these other people come from? They're not brothers. One of them's a girl. So I was just wondering about that, why the, I guess just it was an opportune phrase, you all could say, the Barr Brothers, instead of thinking too hard and being like, I don't know, like Paige and Vielle in two bars or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we, you know, I guess we just weren't exactly sure, like, when we were starting with the band, exactly what, you know, what it was going to be and what it would become, and we thought that was at least with a name that somehow would ring true, you know.
And do you think it still does?
Yes, I do. I mean, I wish that it represented Sarah more, because she's become absolute, you know, integral, huge part of the band and our sound. And we keep thinking, how can we be like the Barr Brothers and sisters, or you know, everything that we come up with sounds kind of silly. So she's okay with it, you know, but I think everybody it's apparent pretty quickly when you see or hear our music that Sarah's an equal part and a huge voice in the band.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, just the music itself, it's beautiful how the harp is able to go in and move into these different genres, like, you know, kind of Americana and a bit of folk and a bit of blues rock and, you know, all of that. So I like the way you all were able to mesh genres and use all these interesting instruments in your record. Yeah, I think it works out beautifully. And looking at the reviews for Sleeping Operator, I saw one in particular that was really cute. The review basically said something along the lines of, fans will likely like this record if they also like Hot Chocolate, Laid Back Wilco, and the breezy singer-songwriter Bahamas, who you're going kind of on tour with. So I think the review's pretty fair, although I'm kind of more of a hot tea fan instead of a hot chocolate fan, but I still like your music. So I was wondering if you could describe your music in terms of your audience, what they wear, what they like, what they do, how would you describe it?
Oh, tough question. Always the toughest question. Because, I mean, we cover a lot of territory in our band. We're not that kind of band that has really isolated like one really specific sound. At least we don't think we have. You know, sometimes you say that to people and they say, "Oh, you guys totally have a sound." But for me, it's a bit all over the place. And so there's a lot of into the music that it can kind of be played expressively, and it can be, there's a lot of improvisational elements that can happen at the live show, but as far as the records go and the recorded body of work, yeah, it's definitely a softer sounding band, you know, like in comparison to most of what you're going to hear on the radio. And I think, yeah, we're really interested in really warm acoustic tones. You know, we use a lot of wooden instruments. The harp is a giant chunk of wood, and all, you know, Brad mostly plays acoustic guitars, and we travel around with a pump organ from the late 1800s that is a solid chunk of oak, and, you know, the upright bass. So a lot of what we're going for is a very warm, natural tone, a very balanced band, but then to take that and experiment with, you know, maybe different ways of amplifying it, throwing it through old spring reverbs and kind of, starting with a good acoustic tone and then developing it from there. And then, of course, just, you know, a good song, a song that can speak to people, nothing, you know, too blunt. It's, our stuff is often, you know, I can say this because I'm not the main songwriter, it's my brother, but it's, you know, it's there's a lot of poetic freedom and liberties to kind of paint brooks and people can get, you know, different feelings off of the songs. I don't know if that answers your question.
I guess I was thinking more like, do they have beards? Do they wear flannel? Do they like cold versus hot weather? Do they like the color blue? I don't know. I was interested to hear like what your take on that was, but that was still a good take. You're basically saying that it's hard to peg just because of the genres that are attached to your music. And it's more like a fruit salad where you can't really say, I like strawberries, because there's all kinds of other fruits a part of your music.
Yeah. I mean, actually we have a pretty diverse audience as well. I guess that kind of, you know, it represents the music and the audience. You know, we often you'll see, I mean, you know, people from the ages of, you know, 15 to 50, at our shows, and you know, it's not like a jump off the, you know, like people aren't moshing. It's not a crazy dance party, but also I think we play well when people are, you know, not just totally sedated. So we like to play, you know, a mix between standing venues and seated theaters, places where people can really listen to the music. I think that above all is probably the biggest attribute of our fans, is they're generally kind of real music lovers, and they love to hear, wow, these guys are like, you know, doing new things with the instruments that I've never seen. And, you know, kind of, you can peer in and try to take a look at how the harp has got toilet paper strung through it, so it distorts, or there's a lot of that going on stage. So yeah, I think we're kind of a music lovers band first.
We'll be right back.
mentioned just a little bit ago about how your music may not be like the kind of music that's on popular radio, which is really interesting because I was looking at the record and it seems like most of this record, not to mention most of the songs that you all have recorded in the past, have been roundabouts like 4 to 5 or even 6 minutes long. And considering that, you know, this is kind of a time where people are really, you know, they're into short attention spans, you know, 140 character lives, and they tend to purchase songs that are about 3 minutes long. I think that's really interesting that you all have just, the way that you play music is kind of more wandering and a little bit longer, more of an experience. So I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about that in terms of the songwriting or recording process. Like, is there usually a time where you think, okay, enough is enough, we need to stop and cap the song because it's going to go on forever if we don't?
I mean, there's one song called Half Crazy, which I believe has been played on the radio a fair amount lately, and that was actually a 25-minute song when we recorded it. And I'm the chopper of songs. I have to be the one that goes in there and whittles stuff down. So, you know, we it's all just kind of the way that we hear things. We're not particularly fast-moving people in a lot of ways, I think. You know, we take our time, you know, try to be pretty patient with the music. And, we do feel like a lot of the best stuff comes from these kind of builds that happen in a song, these kind of natural little dynamic builds that sometimes you can't rush. On the other hand, I think if any of us, I think we'd be happy if we were writing 3-minute songs that we loved. It's just not something that happens naturally. I don't really know why it takes us maybe a little longer, but, you know, I think patience is a nice thing to experience in music, just kind of sitting on something and letting it, you know, build or if it's a more rhythmic thing, sometimes, you know, it's a little more entrancing when something becomes very hypnotic over a longer period of time.
I'm not saying that's a bad thing that these songs are longer, because just listening to the record before I talked to you today, like, I was just able to listen to it all in one setting, and it was beautiful. It was like wonderful, atmospheric, experimental folk that really, it was just a beautiful thing to have in the background and listen to. And it's almost timeless. You forget that you're listening to it for like 40 minutes because it's just so good. It just passes so quickly. But I guess just in the terms of like younger audiences and trying to create these little,
sound bites.
Sound bites, exactly. That was the word I was looking for. Like these sound bites and just trying to get them to listen to it in like 30 seconds or less. It's just an interesting dynamic there. And I just wanted to see what your thoughts were about it. But
yeah. And, you know, so we have Sarah in the band who comes from a classical background too, where, you know, these pieces can be, you know, 20, 30 minutes long. So she's, you know, accustomed to long form music. And Brad and I grew up listening to a lot of, we were kind of jazzers when we were younger. So, you know, we were often indulged by like Miles Davis records where the songs would be 12, 13 minutes. And I think, yeah, we just have a love for the long, slow development. There's such a payoff, you know, like 5 or 6 minutes into a song when it's been building. I think we love that, especially live performing. We love that feeling of just things just kind of accumulating energy.
And even I was looking over the record, I think it was your brother who wrote down kind of like a synopsis for each one on some website. And he mentioned how Static Orphans was originally attached to, was it Loving Enough? And so that was supposed to actually be a longer song, but then it kind of got split off. And I mean, even that like 2-minute Static Orphans song is just, it's really pretty. It's like beautiful, almost like a score to a movie. Or you could just, for like 2 minutes, you can imagine characters like, you know, walking through a landscape or maybe dealing with some emotional issue or, you know, enjoying life or whatever. It's really pretty and very emotive. And it's like, even without words, you're able to do that within 2 minutes. And it's just really great.
Yeah, I think we all want to, you know, at best for me, music is an escape. And I think if you can put somebody in a different headspace where all of a sudden, you know, they're seeing things around them differently, then it can really offer a lot to people. And so, yeah, with that piece, it was kind of a thought of how can we start the record where we really kind of maybe set people in a bit of a different headspace so that the rest of the record, you know, is taken in that atmosphere.
But that was just, I loved it so much. It was great. And I was like, are there going to be lyrics to this? Are they going to be singing soon? And it was great that there wasn't, because it made me listen even more just to hear what the next step was going to be. So thank you for that song.
Well, that was built for you then.
Oh, thank you. Yay. It was built for Joni. You should put that in the liners. So another thing too, with the amount of genres and the amount of different elements to Sleeping Operator, you know, with the blues, the folk, some African, you know, experiences in there. I imagine you all have eclectic taste in music, and you probably listen to all kinds of artists and groups and genres. Are there any that you are listening to right now or that you would recommend people listen to?
Oh, man. Well, yeah, sure. There's my favorite record that I've heard recently. Well, geez. Okay, there's a guy named Kishibashi, who, these are all musicians that we've gotten to tour with. Those are often the only shows we actually really get to see, because we're moving so fast these days. But I'd say four records that I would recommend right now would be Kishibashi, he was in the band Of Montreal, and he's a great, great violinist, and also a great singer, and he's kind of made this whole other kind of cinematic fusion form of music that's kind of like nothing I've ever heard. Let's see, Alexei Murdoch is a guy that we got to do some shows with last year that we really love his vibe. He's a Scottish singer and has a nice, talk about patient. His music is so, so patient and so mellow. It just picks a mood and kind of stays there, and that really will put you in a great headspace. Basakiu Koyete is a guy that we have been into. He's a Ngoni player from Mali, West Africa. I can spell that for you later if you need.
Yeah, that would be helpful.
Yeah. he plays an instrument called the Ngoni, which is kind of like a West African banjo. It's this little hide head and three-stringed instrument. And I heard his music a while ago, and I absolutely loved it. And then it turned out a friend of mine was going over to Mali to engineer Basakiu's record. And so he took some of our songs over with him. And unfortunately, there was like crazy coup d'etat the day that my friend landed. And he got stuck in Mali, and the airport was closed, and there was guys in the streets with, you know, the military had kind of taken over the government. So he actually ended up kind of stuck there in the studio. And so he had Basakiu play on some of the Bar Brothers tracks. And they came back, and it was amazing. And then when Basakiu was finishing his record in Montreal, my brother and I went in and played on his record. And then just this summer, he came back over, and we all went into the studio together and recorded for 2 days with him and his band, which is a few of his sons, this five-person kind of desert butt band from up by Timbuktu. And so we all, had this great collaboration, and we're huge fans of his. So he's one of our favorites, Basakiu Koyete. And then, we're playing the next 3 days with the War on Drugs, who I think are great. I'm sure if you're a radio station, then you're probably playing their music now. Mm-hmm. They seem to be all over. But I got nothing but great things to say about those guys.
That seemed a little bit forced just now. Is that, are you really a fan of their music, or is it kind of
the War on Drugs?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I am. No, I the drummer in that band was our childhood neighbor.
Oh.
In Providence, Rhode Island, and then he moved to Philadelphia when he was really young, like 10 years old or something like that, and we hadn't seen each other in like 15 years, I think, and we bumped into each other in Japan. We were both playing a surf rock festival like 10 years ago now. And then I was just in Los Angeles when the War on Drugs were playing at the Troubadour, and I called them up and I went to see their show, and I loved it. I thought it was awesome. It was like, I'm a sucker for long form guitar solos. Not enough people take them these days, and some of their songs were just going long and I really appreciate that. So I am a total fan of that band, yeah.
Oh, great. And then I also saw you all are, I guess, are maybe doing some leg of your tour with Bahamas. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're doing a swap. We're opening for his CD show and CD launch show in Toronto, and then he's opening for us in Montreal.
Oh, cute. Well, I interviewed him a couple months back, and he was a cool guy. We talked about beards. I tried convincing him that, you know, if you want more money, maybe you should go out for like a Pantene product endorsement or something, because his beard and his hair is so glorious. And yeah, I don't know. I would suggest
really
the same for you. If you think you should do that, you know, you should try getting some Axe or some, you know, like Dove men care products to back you up, and you can have long, luxurious hair.
You know, check in with us in a year. We might have to go down that road. Hopefully we won't, but it's very, you know, it's very likely, and there's a lot of hair in this band.
I was going to say, too, Sarah has a pretty decent head of hair, so that could also help her, too.
Yep. Andreas, he's got nice, thick, black hair. He's, you know, Argentine, so he's, it's great. This has been a good, enlightening conversation.
Yes, of course it is. Between the ice cream and the hair care products, and, you know, I'm happy to encourage such conversations on the air. You mentioned those collaborations. Do you have any dream collaborations in mind for, I don't know, maybe the next record or the next tour?
Oh, boy. Gosh, I'm always riff. Every morning I wake up and think, oh, man, I should call that person and see if they want to make some music together. But I was just listening to Juana Molina. I don't know if you ever play her. I was just listening to her the other day and thinking, God, I would love to make music with her someday, and I was imagining the harp and some of what we do with her voice on it. So, just endless collaborative ideas.
Well, you could maybe, you know, one day create a super group with all these different elements from all over the world and then go crazy with it. Because it sounds like you all have the ability to do that right now, but you could expand upon it with even more people. Maybe some people from, like, I don't know, Morocco or France, or, you know, maybe even Russia or Germany or something.
Yeah, Pangea of musicians.
Pangea, there you go. You could do something with that. Call it Pangea. The Pangea brothers, I don't know, something like that would be great.
I just want to come down to West Virginia.
Yes, actually. How did you know I was going to suggest you do that? You know, you're always welcome to come down to West Virginia. And if you bring some poutine, that would be great, too, because I've never...
Oh, you want to try the poutine?
I went to Montreal when I was younger, and I tried it then, and I can't remember if I liked it, loved it, or if I was indifferent. It was one of those three. So I would like to revisit it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, for those listeners who don't know what poutine is, this is my moment of PR for the nation of Quebec, although it's just a province in Canada, but they see themselves as a nation. And the poutine is the national food of Quebec, and it is a glorious thing. It's a dish of French fries smothered in gravy with cheese curds on top, and the cheese kind of melts, and the gravy covers the fries. And it's you can, you know, be out till 4 in the morning drinking your Molson, whatever, and if you have a poutine, you wake up in the morning feeling great. So it's the great Canadian dish.
It sounds a bit like a hungover dish in a way. Like, I don't know how one would have thought about it unless they were really in the mood for something that was greasy and hearty and good. Like what normal person would think, okay, I'm going to put all of this food there and I'm going to eat it later and not regret it. Because it seems...
It's true. One often doesn't remember eating poutine. Right.
You don't remember it, but it tasted good.
It tasted good. That's why you can't remember it.
I was like six. I wasn't drunk. Uh-huh. That would have been messed up. No, I can't remember. I've been to Toronto, Montreal, and Quebec. And yeah, it was like I loved all of them. We went to Old Quebec, and it was it was so cute. We went stayed in a bed and breakfast. I learned a little bit of French. It was just adorable. My family and I need to go back to Canada in the near future. Maybe venture out into Vancouver or return back to our old stomping grounds. It was really great. I like Canada. It's a cool place. It gets a bad reputation.
Just being nice.
Yeah.
Bad reputation for being too nice, I think.
Yeah. What would you say in response to that? Like, how would you defend Canada being a great place to go to?
Oh, man. I mean, you got moose. That's what more do you need? There's, you know, Canada, I'm originally from the U.S. I'm from Rhode Island. And I moved to Canada 10 years ago, and I could defend Canada all day long. I mean, you have beaver, you have rivers, you have nice people. You got, I'm not doing a good job here. I feel like I should start over again.
I was laughing. When you said moose, I started laughing. I had to pull away from the microphone or else the audio would have just been distorted. That was the first thing that came to my mind when I was, thinking about defending Canada is that there's moose. You didn't mention maple syrup yet. I was waiting for that. So,
well, yeah, maple syrup, we have endless maple syrup. Although, you know, you probably heard about the great maple syrup caper.
No.
That happened.
No, I didn't.
No, that put a bit of a dent in the economy up there. There was basically a giant storage facility of maple syrup in Quebec, and somehow somebody fell asleep at the wheel, and the place got robbed, and literally millions and millions of dollars and millions of gallons of maple syrup went missing, and they think maybe it got shipped over to China. Nobody really knows what happened, but it was a big deal, and actually it did affect the national economy.
Was that this past year or was that last year?
I think that was 2 years ago.
I did not
hear
that.
I think they caught the guys eventually.
Well, how would you punish them? Like, what would you do some sort of like torture or like they pour maple syrup on their bodies and they make them like repent for their maple syrupy sins? Like, how would you punish people that steal maple syrup?
I like that image. Like maybe like tarred and feathered, but maybe instead like maple syrup and beaver tail. Or something. I like that. That's what I'd do.
Whatever the court system is over there, the judicial system, you should be a part of it and you should help with the legislation so that this can come about. I'm sure that's very fair and very right and but very Canadian, I assume. Oh gosh, this has been a great conversation, just all over the place. So I guess just to end our great conversation, what's going on with you all next and what do you want fans and other assorted people to know about your band?
Just that we are, we love having the opportunity to play for people. My brother and I have been at it for a long time, and we've been really fortunate with this new record to actually, it's really the first record we ever put out where there seemed like there was kind of an audience for it, waiting for it. And that was such a nice feeling to know that you have this rapport with people. And I don't know what to say besides we're in it for the long haul, and we really appreciate anybody that buys the record and listens to it. And, you know, we look forward to many more years of music making.
The Barr Brothers just released their sophomore record, Sleeping Operator, this past month. You can find the band on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all under the name The Barr Brothers. To hear more of their music, make sure to listen to A Change of Tune, airing Saturday night at 10 on West Virginia Public Radio. I'm Joni Deutsch. Thanks for listening.